And now it's your turn, your phone calls with our special guest, David Sirita. Lots to talk about, the universe, time travel, spirituality, you name it. We've got it right here on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, David Sirita, our guest, and your phone calls as well. David, I like the tie-in, by the way, with Genesis. But let me ask you a question just about Jesus here. This has always fascinated me. You were referencing Krishna as well. Mm-hmm. Might the individual be one of the same?
It's really amazing, because if you think, again, of what singularity is, and that any person who attains singularity enlightenment is in a unified field with it, and there is no separation. Is it possible that every great cycle that humanity goes through, God in the highest, takes human form? I mean, could it have been that Krishna was just an embodiment of that same consciousness that Christ is, that Buddha is different? Buddha is a man who attained enlightenment. Christ and Krishna are beings that were said to be what is known as an avatar, is a being who is born that way. They don't attain it. They've always been that. And possibly Osiris back in the times of Egypt. I don't really know the answer to that. It's a really difficult question, and I have pondered it, and I've gone into some pretty powerful evidence. The only difference with Krishna is that it is described in the Gita that no matter how many times, thousands of times brighter than the sun he was when he appeared after the great battle of Kurukshetra, that you could actually gaze upon him. The difference between the Ancient of Days who appears to the first prophet in the Bible, Enoch, and who appeared to Moses, and that Jesus when he transfigured on the mount, that it was so powerful you could not look. And if you consider that the creator of the universe, the force of that creation, contains so much energy that there's no way a human being could bear to look at it in its entirety. It would devastate them. It seems more accurate that you couldn't look, that you couldn't survive a direct gaze unless God lowers God's vibration to make it possible for the human to merely survive a fractionary gaze. I mean, Enoch, when he sees God, he falls flat on his face, just like the disciples did when Jesus transfigured on the mountain. They could not stand up. They could not look at him. There are many examples of transfigurations in the extra-biblical Gospels where the disciples were begging him to stop and return to normal because the ecstasy in the Holy Spirit was too powerful for them to bear. But there are no descriptions of that in Krishna's story. There is this great light upon him that is enormous for a human being to look at, but it's not described at that magnitude. So just based on that, and I can't say I know for certain the answer, I would say that there is a difference.
All right, let's go to the phones. You ready? We'll pick it up by going to our wild card line. You're on Coast to Coast with David Sirita. Hi there.
Hey, good morning. My name is Chuck. I'm calling from Virginia right now.
Hi, Chuck. Thank you.
I just had two quick questions, and I'll listen off the air. Our first question, as far as space travel, they say the shortest distance between two points is probably like A to B, a straight line.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think about the folding of that space to have A meet B in the middle? And the other question would be, we know humans have been on the planet for like tens of thousands of years. It seemed like in the last 100 or so years, like the technology has been splurged on us. Do you think that has been an influence of alien or, say, time travelers who give us this technology? And I'm thinking that we now should be, like, more advanced than what we are now. And I listen off the air if you understand those questions.
Well, that's a great question. Actually, the second question,
Go ahead. I guess he's listening.
Yeah, I mean, as far as folding space and time, I mean, that's essentially the Einstein-Rosen bridges and wormholes. And you can clearly see it takes too much energy to do that unless you reduce the mass gravity effect of the two points that you're folding. Otherwise, it's just impossible. No civilization could harness the negative energy of 100 million suns for an entire year. That's just not possible. But the other way it is. The second question, I mean, again, go back to the mathematician Pythagoras. In the book A Pythagoras of Life, there are very clear, distinct descriptions of, and this is not a channeled book. This is a very scholarly, you know, printed book in England at a very high university level that, Pythagoras actually grew up with Astraeus, an actual extraterrestrial who taught him higher math and higher learning, that he learned from these star beings as they were described. And we go to John Nash, who was called schizophrenic, but you got to wonder about a guy who solved every math problem of his day. He was not incapable of doing his work, and yet he said he was in contact with extraterrestrials. So as far as how extraterrestrials communicate with us, I believe we have evidence in two cases of two great mathematicians that were communicating with extraterrestrials, and what they learned from them eventually translates into technology. It's possible Einstein and Tesla were, but didn't want to speak about it because they didn't want to be ridiculed. Maybe that's one way it happens. The other way it could happen is just through very non-intrusive presence of extraterrestrials that teach us in this kind of fashion. And I've actually had experiences like that, and that's where I have learned a lot of my physics from these same type of beings. So that answers this question. I hope it does.
All right, next up, east of the Rockies, you're on Coast to Coast with us. Hi there. Hello.
Hello.
Yeah, go ahead, sir.
Yeah, hi, this is Scott from Virginia, and hi, David, and hi, George. I have a quick question. Have you heard of the concept of Kundalini energy? And have you heard of Gopi Krishna? And how does it... Well, let me just ask you that first.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I've heard of Kundalini energy, and I've experienced it from practicing meditation for 25 years now. I've had many experiences with it, and that is a transformational energy that we can awaken inside of ourselves.
Yeah, well, Gopi Krishna activated it at the age of 34 after 17 years of intensive meditation, mm-hmm. like yourself, and he reported that he felt a stream of liquid light enter his brain through the spinal cord, which caused an immediate expansion of his consciousness, mm-hmm. kind of like his consciousness expanded in waves of light. Mm-hmm. And pretty soon, his observing consciousness became the universe, and then even more than that. Mm-hmm. And he lived in this state for 40 years, and he wrote 16 books on this. And basically, the theory is that it activates a dormant chamber in the brain, mm-hmm. and that our brain is in a state of evolution. Have you heard of any of this before?
Oh, absolutely. I've heard of all of it. I've met so many different gurus from India. I could name tens of them. I've traveled to India, and I've studied with them, and I've had experiences with masters that are not of this earth anymore. But that, I mean, those are all great teachers. I mean, if you really practice these techniques and you do it faithfully, you will have the experience they are having. But in consciousness, what I'm interested in are the very rare cases where a master can not only experience singularity as consciousness, but they can actually take mass or their body with them and ultimately lead to spaceships and technology that where we can actually move around without destroying our planet. We can actually propel ourselves in air vehicles and motor vehicles that are no longer destroying the planet. I mean, it's one thing to attain consciousness. And if you get really advanced in Buddhism, for example, Buddha says in the Lankavatara 8 Sutra, for those who care to look it up, that there are seven levels of enlightenment, that nirvana doesn't happen until the seventh level, and you can't attain it. The samadhis, or states of enlightenment 1 through 6, are impermanent. You can visit them, enjoy them, they're extremely evolved, but you will not attain supreme enlightenment until you do something for humanity. Because enlightenment by its nature is a unified field for all. You're not becoming enlightened to save yourself. You're becoming enlightened to save yourself and humanity. So the disciple has to become so devoted and so in love with humanity that they want to do something to raise it, to bring it to a higher level, whether that's helping the poor like the Mother Teresa did, or feeding the homeless, or working for the Red Cross, or building new technology that will transform our planet. That's where all of this stuff goes. In order for us to go to these higher levels of consciousness, we have to engage. We can't just sit there and voice out with this light. Although that is a great experience. I've experienced it many times. I'm more involved now in trying to waken people up to the idea of sustainable energy technologies and, you know, getting on to reducing global warming and transforming our global ecology, because that's what I feel motivated to do right now.
David, I'm getting a lot of fast blasts and emails. People want to know about that 60-page report that's available.
It's at AmericanAntiGravity.com. If you go to the breaking news section on the right, you'll see my paper, David Sarita's Advanced Propulsion Document. It's a PDF file, and you can download it right there. It's 60 pages, and I made it so that anyone can understand it. I mean, you don't have to. There's no math formulas in it. It's diagrams and writing in order to understand how I'm able to do this reaching singularity and also breaking the speed of light.
Let's go west of the Rockies. You're on with David Sarita. Hi there.
Hi, George.
Yeah.
This is Steve in Lower Lake, California, about 150 miles north of San Francisco.
Okay, sir. Thank you.
Great show, great guest. I have a couple of questions that I would like to present to David, and I would like to hear your input, too, if you care to give
okay.
it.
Okay, sure thing.
Number one, David, considering that the singularity, within the singularity, all time exists simultaneously, past and future, how does that jibe with the concept of free will?
Well, that's a very, very interesting question. I mean, free will, it's kind of an irony. When we say free will, you remember, if you go back to the proverbial fall in the Garden of Eden, that when we partook of the knowledge of good and evil, we wanted to decide for ourselves, egotistically, what is right and what is wrong, what to do, and that we separated ourselves from singularity, where we are in this unified field state of consciousness and reality that is all pervading in our universe. So in essence, we became individual egos and separated from that. So we do have free will. But because of free will, everyone's will, sometimes we form groups or congregations or corporations or religions that generally agree, although we have infighting or disagreements inside of the corporation or the religion. We generally agree, but we'll always be opposed to another corporation or in competition with another corporation or other religion. So free will, the way I see it from duality, ultimately is suffused with conflict, with duality. That true freedom and true free will is in singularity. That's where you're really free from conflict, and you enter a higher state of freedom or liberation.
Fantastic. Thank you. Second point. I think that you would agree with me that we must assume that this singularity has always existed. It had no beginning.
It had no beginning and no end.
Therefore, David, all things that are possible have not only already happened, but they've already happened an infinite number of times.
Absolutely. That's what Richard Feynman discovered. I mean, it was a revelation for him when he did that simple little experiment. Every event, every possibility has already happened. It's up to us to discover it and then choose it.
So final question, why is it still happening since it's already happened an infinite number of times?
Well, see, because from our perspective in time, it hasn't happened yet. But in singularity, the Alpha and the Omega are one. They've all already happened.
But if you have eternity, then you have plenty of time for everything to have already happened an infinite number of times.
Well, because, again, when you go towards, again, the very slow or long wavelengths, time accelerates, but it accelerates towards infinity. When you go to higher frequency wavelengths, you're hitting another zero point, which is where time slows down to almost towards an infinite zero point. So on both ends of the spectrum, the high frequency perception of time and the low frequency perception, they both go towards infinite zero points. So they are infinities on both ends.
Could you say that singularity is God, David?
That to me, this theory in physics, that's actually the most exciting thing about it to me, is it when you follow the words of the mystics, when Jesus said, when you make the two one, and that I am from the single place, and when you're in the single place, tell the mountain to move, and it will move. It really proves the existence of God. I mean, to me, that's what's so exciting about singularity in physics, is it finally, physics doesn't only prove spirituality, because already quantum physicists could see what Buddhism discovered, that is that all things are impermanent. You know, subatomic particles have what are known as half-lives. Half of the state of that they're in decays in this particular period known as a half-life, and it just keeps decaying, decaying, and transforming and changing. In Buddhism, that's called anicca. Everything is changing. The only thing that is a constant in physics is light. As we know it, it doesn't seem to stop, but it does undergo reactions when it interacts with the photoelectric effect, which is when photons interact with mass. So they go through another change there. So ultimately, the only thing that's constant is light. Everything else is changing. In Buddhism, it's called anicca. So Buddhism already proved that, but singularity is something that I think all of the great masters were pointing to, and I think because we're finding it in physics, it does prove the existence of God. In a physics sense, if you were an atheist and you really looked at this properly, you would be convinced.
Let's go to our wild card line. You're up with us on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi, this is John in Simi Valley.
Oh, right, and that's in California, for those who might not know.
Thank you. This is one of my favorite guests that you've had. I wanted to ask David, by the way, I've seen the evidence video, and I think everybody should see that. It's a very good video.
Thank you.
My questions have to do with, you were mentioning Pythagoras, I read a book by a man by the name of Guy Murchie, Music of the Spheres. Mm-hmm. And in that book, he tends to pull together the microcosm and the macrocosm in terms of music.
Mm-hmm.
And proportion. And so I was just curious, had you seen these properties of music or musicality in the physics research that you've done?
Well, music and sound, actually Pythagoras says one of the ways to transform consciousness or possibly even flesh into light is through sound or certain intonations. And if you look at sound, of course, it's also a waveform, and it has higher and lower frequency wavelengths. So it operates in the same way, and the way you experience time through sound is also operates in the same kind of physics that I'm talking about. But, you know, music is actually something my fiance and girlfriend's involved with. I love music, but I don't really understand it. I just enjoy it. It's just music is something. I mean, really, to me, music is one of the only vehicles for time travel that I know of. When I listen to a Beatles song, I'm there. I was born in 61, but I'm in the 60s and the 70s. I feel like I'm there. It's almost like that movie with, what was it called? Somewhere in Time. I don't know if you...
Somewhere in Time with Christopher Reeve.
With Christopher Reeve and what's the actress's name?
Jane Seymour.
Jane Seymour. If you concentrate hard enough, if the music takes you back and you really believe you're there, maybe you will move back in time and through music. I mean, it's an incredible possibility.
It's one of my favorite movies.
It is. Amazing.
And by the way, the music is fantastic.
It's really incredible.
In that movie as well. Thanks for that call. Appreciate it. David, just a few moments ago before break, then we'll come back with final phone calls for you. And Lex has links up on both of your websites. What's next on your plate in the next few months?
Well, right now I'm making a series of about 15 EcoPod films on solutions for the ecology. I'm finishing editing Dan Aykroyd Unplugged on UFOs for Arclight Studios. They're going to be releasing it virtually everywhere in early 2006.
Hey, why don't you get Dan on our show with you, and we'll do an hour in the not-too-distant future. You want to do that?
Yeah, I think he would probably enjoy that. I'll see where he's at.
Okay, I'll let you work on that with Lisa, if you would. And we'll be back in a moment with David Sirita on Coast to Coast AM. Well, on our next Coast to Coast program, William Henry, that's right, investigative mythologist, will be our special guest as he talks about New Atlantis prophecy, so you don't want to miss that. We'll be back in a moment, though. More of your phone calls with our guest David Sirita on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. We'll go straight to your phone calls with our guest, David Sarita, because the clock is ticking. Talk about going back in the time, David. I bet sometimes we should do that because we always have more people on hold than we can get to.
Johnny Cash just took me there.
Isn't that something?
I just love Johnny Cash. I love him so much.
East of the Rockies, you're on the air with us. Hi there.
Is this me?
Yes, sir.
Thank you. Great. Wow. Lot to get to. I'm going to have to take notes. I wanted to call in. I've never been able to get through before, so if I go long, I'll try to be quick, but I don't know when my next chance to get on is. Again, George, always good shows. Tonight, stupendous.
Thank you, David.
I think you're expanding a lot of minds out there, and you just, you're just blowing the lid off stuff. It's really amazing stuff. I'm really into it.
Thank you.
Okay, I'm loving it. I'm assuming a lot of other people. I'm in Lehigh Valley in Pennsylvania. I'm assuming a lot of other people are loving it out here as well. George, I have a couple of comments about the show, and then just one or two quick ones for David, and then I'm gone.
Okay.
George, let's see. Yeah, I got you on AM 790 out here, which is a lot of Republican stuff, so it's kind of nice and refreshing to hear such open-minded free thinkers on your show. You know what I mean? I'm digging it. Anyway...
Well, you always will get an open mind program here.
Well, that's why I love about the show. I try to listen every night. But the paranormal investigators you had on the other night with the EVP.
That was Art's program.
I'm sorry.
Restrict this to David's call, okay?
Okay.
Because he's got so many people calling for him.
Yeah, go ahead. Like I said, I really did want to get a bunch of stuff in. Anyway, David, are you the Kwisatz Haderach?
What's that?
It's really weird. I was just starting to read Dune by Frank Herbert today.
Oh, right. I've read those a long time ago.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, there's a lot of religious stuff in there, and the hero of the story is obtaining powers very similar to what you're talking about, the shortening of the way, being in two places at once. I just thought that was interesting because you're kind of quoting a lot of... you know, actual religious text, and here you are kind of mirroring almost this this fictional text.
Well, actually, in Buddhism, the bodhisattvas are able to appear in thousands of places in the universe at the same time.
Wow.
And the Dalai Lama is an emanation of one of the eight great bodhisattvas, whom is called Avalokiteshvara, Supreme Bodhisattva of Compassion. And the reason they appear in so many places at the same time is only as they are needed, as people need to receive teachings, it will become first two places, bilocation, trilocation, quadrilocation, and then it goes all the way up. Yeah. And there's also examples of that with Christ in the Nag Hammadi library text. So that we know how that's answered in quantum physics models. Richard Feynman showed us how that's possible.
Again, that's one of the things I wanted to comment on. George, your guests always do their homework.
And they do. I'm
this
telling
guy's
you.
Not only no exception to that, but he's just blowing the lid off it. He's just going above and beyond. And like I said, it's really, really exciting stuff. I'm glad I got to hear it. And thanks for having me on.
Okay, I'm glad you got through finally after all these years. First time caller line, your turn. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hello, George.
Yes, sir. Hi.
Hi, David. Hi, George. My name is John. I'm from Tucson, Arizona.
Go ahead,
Tucson. John.
How you guys doing?
Good. I just drove through there the other day.
There you go. Yeah, actually, I just, it's great to speak with you guys, and I just wanted to let you know, I've done some research with Mr. Stephen Hawking and his advancement of Einstein's theory of relativity, and I just wanted to know, does that have anything to do with this, does it play into the time travel and singularity?
Well, let's get that one first. Go, David.
Yeah, I don't think Einstein went into singularity. It's only Paul Dirac, who won the Nobel Prize, and I think it's 1932-33, he shared it with Erwin Schrodinger, who did work on wave models. He is the one, and only in his rejected paper, who found this singularity thing. I'm bringing it to light and merging it with spiritual models to give it some body so that we can really, really realize that there is a genius discovery here thanks to Paul Dirac.
But it wasn't a very popular theory when he first came out with it.
No, because it was so beyond everything. And it's only those quantum models where he saw the dual pairs of electron anti-electrons going into higher frequency orbits and disappearing that led him to it. Because he wanted to know where they went. Where did they go? We've never seen matter literally transform and disappear before on any scale in the physics world. And he's the only one to have taken note of it. He notes that other physicists misinterpreted what was happening. He said there's no way antimatter and matter came anywhere near each other. They just went into higher frequency orbits and they disappeared. They did not annihilate. They did not meet up. So that is the breakthrough. Paul Dirac.
Do you think SETI, the search for extraterrestrial intelligence, do you think they're wasting time and money doing what they're doing?
Yeah, I think they need to be more open-minded over there. I mean, I've had tried to get into conversations with Seth Shostak, and I've talked to some of his staff, and they've admitted to me there's no doubt. I mean, we can look at information inside a billion hertz waves right now, light waves. That's in the radio spectrum. The color red is in the quadrillion hertz spectrum, and that's even a very low frequency wavelength. So if you can't even look at information inside of visible light, we can see visible light, but we can't attach and extract information from it. And you consider an extraterrestrial civilization is going to be broadcasting most likely in the gamma spectrum when you consider wave distortion over great distances. Longer waves share information and they cross other waves as they travel through the universe. They distort. Remember in the old days, your cordless phone, you could hear your neighbor on your phone. That's because the longer wavelengths, lower frequency cordless phones would capture the waves of your neighbor because they crossed each other. That's distortion. But the higher frequency they get, the more pure they are. An extraterrestrial civilization is going to be, to me, is going to be sending information in gamma waves. So we're not even anywhere near that. But biophotons lend another possibility. That if we can actually look at information in biophotons, like what happened in the documentary, The Secret Life of Plants, I think SETI just needs to open their minds. They're just too closed-minded over there. They won't listen to this stuff. And I, you know, get on the phone, I get them to admit this, but they won't take it seriously. They're stuck. I think they just want to collect money and get paid and look at empty space and look at blank signals all day. It must be pretty boring over there, really.
Wild Card Line, you're on the air with us. Hi there.
Good evening, George. This is Blair in Sedona, Arizona.
Hey,
about,
Blair.
Hi, 200 miles north of Tucson. And hi,
sure
David.
Thing.
Hi, Blair. I was just in Sedona visiting my friend John Dumas.
Oh, very cool.
The musician.
I have a quick comment about the transfiguration, and then, George, one question concerning benign Sirian ozone replenishment. And I think David knows what that's about. According to the Urantia book, the transfiguration was a celestial acknowledgement of Jesus' completion of incarnations in the bodies of those he created, and this resulted in him receiving total sovereignty in this local universe. And if Bible scholars, if they look, after the transfiguration, he started saying, all power in heaven and earth has been granted me. Mm-hmm. But, Mr. Sarita, my question, I've been hearing in the news about new ozone holes that have been recently reported in the media. And I remember when you were on, I think it was with Dan Aykroyd in 2001 on Art Show, you said that the Sirians were propelling balls of ice into our atmosphere and replenishing our ozone. I was wondering if you'd comment on that.
Well, there was no doubt that NASA, it was Louis A. Frank, who's a National Space Act Award-winning astrophysicist, who's the principal investigator on many of our satellites that are observing the cameras that can see ultraviolet photons, which are invisible. He was detecting ice balls, which were actually water comets that entered our upper atmosphere. They could only see them in the invisible, not in the infrared, which means they were almost non-physical, or what I call zero mass. Transform balls of water, but nevertheless, the water was breaking down, hitting the atmosphere, and as the water is bombarded with intense solar radiation in the upper atmosphere, it separates hydrogen and oxygen. Oxygen goes through further transmutations and turns into ozone. So the head of astrochemistry, Joseph Knuth, confirmed that these balls of water, which they don't know where they are coming from, are producing a certain amount of ozone, but he said probably not enough to heal our Earth ozone layer problem. But they are producing, you know, quite a bit of ozone, but not enough to repair the damage.
Well, I guess they're taking care of us in the sense that they consider us unfinished experimental beings of some sort, and they're giving us a boost, but then we have to take it from there, huh?
We got to take it from there. It's buying us a little more time, probably, wherever these balls of water are coming from. There's no doubt they're here. This is not metaphysical speculation, and it's not channel information. NASA has confirmed they're here. But the question is it buying us more time? We still have to change our ways. We still have to transform our technology towards more sustainable technologies to keep this as our home.
Great. Hey, thank you, George, for taking my call.
My pleasure, Blair. Let's move to our next wild card line. It's your turn, and where might you be?
Eric from Indianapolis.
Go ahead, Eric.
Okay. Hey, I was wondering why such an excellent theory with that was rejected by scientists, because it would have opened up the possibility of the experiment being replicated on a more open basis. And that it almost goes into the fact that it would allow even for digital compression to be even be improved, to allow even like a sound wave to almost the infinite sound wave to be brought into that and stored on a computer in a more more complete basis than what it is now.
Well, there's no doubt. You see, when you hang around physicists like I have, these guys argue, they yell at each other. They're like kids. They're geniuses. But all they do is fight all day to see who's going to be the next genius, whose theory is going to make the top of the hill. And so that's why good theories get rejected. But good theories over time survive and eventually triumph over their predecessors.
And yes, you have inspired me to even pursue this theory even on some stuff that I've had, because I've always had a fundamental feeling, even since I was about 5 years old, that there was something wrong with Einstein's theory of relativity.
Mm-hmm. Well, the only thing wrong is that we rely on the speed of light, which is the limitation, and we think it's actually an accurate measurement, but it can't detect all events in the universe in real time. Therefore, it creates time because it is in time. It's a velocity. You end up finding out that all waves are dual pairs that give birth to inertia, which is the slowing down, which is the creation of time. Inertia creates time. If you look at a time wave by itself, it's actually inertia that's causing it to become a wave. In singularity, you're beyond all waves. There is no wave because there's no resistance. Waves are born out of resistance. When two waveforms come together, they form a spiral pair, which causes inertia, which is slowing down. So singularity is the ultimate theory in physics that I've ever seen. I've never seen anything
like it. Yeah, and it does go with a conversation even had with a friend of mine that we've been having for the last couple of years, too, about this. It's just that being able, but even with that, it seems like the closer you can get, it sounds like you almost could be able to manipulate the length of the wave, like you have mentioned.
Well, you do. If you can manipulate the wave, that's how you move through time.
Was one of the theories I had with being able to compress even like a sound wave to be able to get it into a digital compression for that. I do a lot of music, and and I have been using analog and spinning analog records because of the fact that you cannot get that full feeling with any digital medium.
No, it's not as warm, is it? It's not as warm. It doesn't have that feeling.
No, it does not have that warm feeling, and you have to have that warm feeling to get the emotion out in the music.
See, that's what maybe biophotons will be able to carry more feeling tone than the photons we're using right now with radio waves. I mean, there'll be more feeling. I mean, we have a certain amount of feeling over the radio and over television, but biophotons, I think, are going to be the future.
Thanks for your call, Eric. Isn't it amazing, David, how the various religions do all have similarities to them?
They do.
As if the story was the same, that it just got changed along the way.
Yeah, it's that duality. When the ego is born in duality, it believes it's separate and becomes an island. And the same religion becomes, there must be 400 or 500 schools of Islam. 500 different churches of Christianity. The number 500 is common. Buddhism has 500 schools, four major schools. Christianity is the same. They all are. Jesus said in the Gospels that if Satan's kingdom be divided, how shall it stand? And then he again, in the Gospel of Thomas, keeps speaking about the undivided. So when you enter the undivided, which is single, there's no more conflict inside of you. You don't believe. God doesn't want us to fight holy wars in his name because he's in singularity. God is oneness. There is no separation, duality. There is no I'm right and you're wrong. That doesn't exist anymore. These religious, these terrorists who are fanatics who believe God wants to fight for them, they haven't figured it out yet. They still think this is all about who's got it right and who's got it wrong. And it isn't about that. It's like that old song, there ain't no good guy, there ain't no bad guy. There's just you and me and we just disagree. That's what it's about.
First time caller line. You're on the air with us. Hi there.
Hi, George. Thanks for taking my call, David.
Sure thing.
Great show. I really appreciate it. Just wanted to make a couple quick mentions, and I'll get right off, like give you more time for others. But I agree with you. I think it is that life is what it is, and we just make up names for it to try to justify of something that's already there and has been there forever. I think it's interesting, and was wondering if the previous caller talking about the Kundalini and opening up of your spiritual gateways, almost as it were. David, do you think there's any possibility of a almost forced consciousness of people if certain amounts of strong-willed practicing meditators were able to focus at a same time on a same place? Could we possibly force people to kind of open up their minds and maybe start dispelling this good and evil and start realizing we need to just be what we are and live with it?
Well, what happens is when each brain wave on its own is very weak, it's a low amplitude signal, but if millions and even billions of people think together the same thought, the amplitude increases, and therefore the probability that the desired outcome will be attained will also increase because there's more amplitude to that thought wave. Art Bell's done it on the show himself. I mean, with the fires in Salmon Arm, it got everybody to think rain, and it rained. So if you think together, but the problem with duality, entering the dual state, is everyone is opposed to everyone else. You cancel out all of the energy, and you create so much inertia, resistance, you can't get anything done. You have a great idea because you want to do something, and someone else is opposing you. You want to bring zero-point energy or more solar power and hydrogen, like Schwarzenegger is trying to bring the hydrogen highway in California, and then all the gas companies oppose him. But that's how nothing happens. But when we think together as a nation and as a planet, then the amplitude of our waveforms, our thought forms, is going to manifest because millions of people are thinking together, getting closer to singularity, to oneness.
David, thank you so much for being on the program. I appreciate it.
Thank you, George. It's a pleasure being on with you. I look forward to our next chat.
Absolutely. Absolutely. For Dan Galante, Steve Carr, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean LaDesour, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. I'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.